This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome back to the Palace Way podcast. I know it's been a while, but we are finally back. Well, I was gonna say back in the studio, back in the Zoom meeting. Bobby Manzi is with me today. Bobby, how are you doing?
I'm not bad. I think we've been to Frederikstad, Birmingham, Selhurst, and beyond. It's a bit of a crap beautiful South song. Sounds like a crap beautiful South song since we've last been on a podcast.
I will say the reason for one of the reasons for our delays is the fact that Bobby's been literally everywhere covering Crystal Palace. I've just had my internship finish, but the two of us were beyond tied up between Europe and transfer deadline. I think we all needed to just take a breather after what happened in the final hours of the window, which of course we will be discussing today, as well as a little bit of Frederikstad, just sort of generally the season so far, and finish with a preview of Sunderland. But I think, just to start it all off, we hosted a space on Twitter about transfer deadline day just after it finished. Temperatures were high. There was a lot of criticism being leveled at the way of the board, the way of the manager, the way of the club, because of how it panned out. And I'd like to just start by maybe cooling things down a bit and saying, on paper, we now have a very, very strong squad. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Oliver Glasner can do with it.
Yeah, I think the squad is in a really good position. I still think the criticism levied at the board and the club about how late the business has been left is extremely valid. And I think that's something that we should still talk about in a moment's time. But let's focus on the positives first. Jeremy Pino, Christian Tsuche really boost the forward line. JD Canvo at centre-back is another good addition. Keeper Mark Gay was pivotal to keeping Oliver Glasner happy. So although there might have been blunders on the way to getting to that scenario where Mark remains at the football club, at least the right situation and the right outcome was reached. I think on paper, in the end, it was a very good window after they started off really well and then kind of come to a halt. But after signing Walter Benitez and Borna Sosa, it shouldn't have taken so long to get to where we did at the end of the window for those three signings to come in so late.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think with Mark Gahey, the majority, most of all, Oliver Glasner will be very happy staying at the football club for at least another year, by the sounds of it anyway, if the reports to be believed that Liverpool won't go back in for him in January. But I think it's very much the manner that the entire situation unfolded that's so disturbing. Because, he's been a loyal servant. He's our captain. He's basically, our best player. And he's been nothing but professional about it this summer when we've seen players like Isak and Wissa throw their toys out the Prem, really, to force a move. And, we clearly weren't on the same page between manager and owner until the final hours of the window. And that's quite worrying, I think, when there's so much love for having a fan at the helm and so much love for Oliver Glasner having just won us two major trophies. So, it's a really conflicting situation for sure.
Yeah, it's certainly not constructive when the manager threatens to resign, and that's the reason Mark Gay remains at the football club when at a time, at the closure of the window, as we were nearing the deadline, it looked like Palace were going to sell Mark Gay to Liverpool. He was sat in Liverpool's London offices waiting for the move to get moved to get his final sign off. It looked like he was going to sign for Liverpool without Palace having a suitable replacement for their captain, one of their best players in the team, a leader, an outstanding defender, incredible player on the ball. He's just a quality you can't replace with a 19-year-old coming through the door in a position that Palace were already short in. So I think it was nothing short of a shambles how the situation was dealt with. But fortunately, the right outcome was reached in the end, that Mark Gay remains a Crystal Palace player. Look, I'm sure he will be slightly disappointed that the Liverpool move didn't come off. However, in the end, and he's going to go to Liverpool, or going to go to a big club next summer, likely Liverpool. But let's see what happens in January, whether a foreign club comes in with a pre-contract offer for him. But he's going to be earning considerably more money than he is on at Palace. He's going to earn a considerably bigger signing bonus than he would have this summer. And he's going to have a season playing Premier League football week in, week out, as long as he doesn't get any injuries, in a World Cup year, where at the moment it looks like, and it's pointing towards, he will be England's starting centre back, as we've seen in this international break.
Yeah, and he's been fantastic for England, just like he's been fantastic for us for quite a while now. I do think centre back's probably the most dubious position across this entire window, maybe forward as well. But JD Convo looks like an unbelievable signing. We obviously haven't seen much of him at a senior level, but he's very highly rated. And if his performance in a single half for the French under 21s this week was anything to go by, he's going to be a very exciting player for us in the years to come, and having a season learning from Mark Gay, he will be very good for him, no doubt. Igor Julio from Brighton. That was probably the most bizarre thing to come out of transfer deadline day. Because when you're looking to replace your captain, your best player, your one of your most long-standing players, typically loaning your biggest rival's fourth or fifth choice centre back doesn't come to mind. So I guess how did it get to this point?
I'm not sure. I think it's a really bizarre one. My understanding is that he was out of the training ground long before Mark Gay's move to Liverpool had been sanctioned. That one had frozen quite a long way down the line. I don't understand how anyone really would have thought he was a suitable replacement for Mark Gay. I think it would have been negligence of the highest order if they would have sold Mark Gay and replaced him with Igor Julio. He frankly wouldn't have got anywhere near replacing the void of Mark Gay. And I understand that when you're trying to replace a player like Mark Gay, you're not going to get the perfect replacement, because he is a world-class player. He is a player an echelon above Crystal Palace Football Club, so you're going to find difficulty there. But really, Igor Julio was a couple of levels down below what Palace should be looking for to replace Mark Gay. The targets were clear. In the summer, you look back at someone like Osman Diamande, but frankly, Sporting, with it being so late in the window, wanted a lot more money than Palace were prepared to pay. He had a little injury as well, but that's something I'm not convinced anyone was too concerned about. But yeah, it just to drop the quality of targets you're looking for so much, you're better off not selling Mark Gay and taking the loss and trying to make that revenue back by having a successful season, whether that's in Europe, the cup competitions, or pushing up for a top half Premier League finish.
Yeah, and as we've spoken about over the course of the window, Palace have quite a bit of PSR headroom, but maybe had cash flow problems. And so you can see the benefit of selling Mark. But the point is, you don't really solve those cash problems if you've got 3 days to, or in this case, 4 hours to sign someone. Like, you're only going to lose out once we let it get to that point in the window where there wasn't synergy between manager and chairman and not a target identified. I think once it got to Aston Villa and we weren't like on the verge of signing someone ready to replace Mark at that point, I just don't think it should have been on anyone's mind to be willing to sanction a move for Mark. And it does concern me that we got to that point. And look, I understand the benefit of wanting to be a club that deals in good faith, lets your players leave when they want to leave, when a good bid's come in. But the truth is that bid from Liverpool wasn't, great. And I think a season of Mark Gahey with the team we have, the squad we have, the management we have is just invaluable. Because clubs like us don't often get to keep our best players together for a prolonged period of time. And it's in those periods you see clubs overperform like we have. And the same thing happened with Brentford when they had Tony, Wissa, and Mbeumo for that season. Or, Leicester when they kept everyone together before they sold Mahrez, Vardy, not Vardy, but Mahrez, Conte, Drinkwater.
Water.
Look, he was fantastic for them, right? Like, his career completely fell off a cliff after that. But he was a major part of their title campaign. But
I do think you raise a good point about the cash flow problems. And if you look at deadline day and how that panned out, everyone was under the impression that Cristian Tatoce was signing on a 5-year deal at £17.5 million. And when it was announced, it was a loan with an obligation to buy. So, yes, you've still got the 5 years. And yes, it's still the £17.5 million. But they put paying the fee off by a year. And you paid a smaller loan fee and then put the fee that they will go out on the outgoings back a further summer because of the amount of money tied up this summer with previous transfers. I think there's about 3 years previous transfers that Palace are paying off this summer. And that's obviously been problematic. They've had the Eze money come in, but now they think, right, we'll offload that Uche money a while and start paying that next season when you're going to get somewhere close to what you expect to be £100 million as long as he sorts his injury issues out for Adam Wharton.
yeah, and if you
So
look,
I think that does show you there the issues that Palace have had with cash flow. And I think that is the prime example, and it speaks volumes. I mean, Steve Parish has been very vocal about the cash flow issues as well. He said as much in the mix zone after the Community Shield win over Liverpool at Wembley. And it has been a problem facing the football club this summer, which is a shame when you do have so much PSR headroom.
yeah, and it's another consecutive summer of us having a positive net spend in the transfer market. I think, Uche is going to be an interesting one because he's really versatile to a point of it being kind of a joke. And he's such a remarkable player to, which we'll get onto as well. But, we wanted to sign a forward that was in addition to, whoever was going to play the Eze role as the starter. That was kind of a trend of the whole window, was Glasner saying we definitely wanted a forward. And we signed Pino to replace Eze. Uche is a striker, 10, 8, 6,
Yeah, he can kind of play all over. I think the attacking business is really good, and you look at the attacking depth, and it's decent. Pino, Sarr, Essa, Uche, and obviously you've got the two strikers in.
Well, two of those players aren't going to play for 6 weeks.
Well, okay, but I'm just saying, if you look at the depth of the squad, you've still got Kamada there who can play in attacking areas. You've got good attacking depth. What I do worry, however, is when you come to the Africa Cup of Nations. And you are dealing with your attacking options being Pino, Essa, and Kamada because you are going to lose Sarr and Uche to that tournament. You know, Senegal and Nigeria are nations you would typically expect to go deep in the African Cup of Nations. So that means you could be losing those players for about 4 weeks of the season. And it's going to be really important if it does look like you're going to lose them for that long to sign somebody in the very early in the January transfer window, whether it's a loan or a permanent, whatever, capable of playing across the front three, because otherwise it looks like Palace could play about six games with very little threat.
But Eddie Nketiah can play 10, surely.
No comment.
If he comes back from injury, he needs to be playing as a nine because I think he had a really unlucky first season with injuries at awful times and roles he was asked to play that he wasn't fully capable with. But he is actually a very good nine with very good instincts, very good finishing, and he's physically quite good. He may not be the strongest, but he can jump. He's got some of the highest height numbers in our entire squad for jumping reach, and he's also rapid. Like there are maybe what two players quicker than him in our whole squad with Lacroix and Sarr. I'd argue Munoz and him are kind of on level footing, if not Nketiah being quicker.
Pino's quite quick.
Pino's quite quick as well, but I'm we yet to sort of see that. Obviously, he had that run at Villa, which was very exciting, but he also did get caught up with. But carrying the ball, we'll see. I think let's just move on to the players who have come in because I think that's where there's more analysis to be had. So you've got
I've
come.
noted as well, actually, on the forward line. Is Rexachi there as well? And at the moment, he's not had a move abroad. It's looking rather unlikely at the moment. Will he actually be an option for Palace for the rest of this season? I doubt it. Is Glasner possibly making a mistake there when you do look at AFCON and maybe he needs another attacking options? Possibly. But I don't know. I'd see very little future for Jezrin Rexachi in a Crystal Palace shirt, so long as Oliver Glasner's there. to the point of which I would be very shocked to see him in a match day squad this side of the well, before the turn of the year for sure, and possibly not at all.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be behind Essay in the pecking order, and that's not a good place for anyone to be in an Oliver Glasner side. I think, fine, I'll talk about this before we move on.
I'm not sure he's going to have a place in the pecking order because I think it was made clear to him that Palace wanted him to leave. He turned down a move to Coventry on deadline day because he was waiting for an Old Firm club to come in. That offer didn't come. He's left himself in a precarious position there, and I think the club will see that, or Oliver will see that. I used you in the squad for a couple of weeks because we didn't have enough attackers now, but I've got enough numbers to get by. I don't need you here.
But
And
same kind of
you could be getting to a Rob Holding situation.
old Naro Hamada, same boat, right? I mean, no, he's injured at the moment, but like it's there are a few players who've been frozen out, and I don't like the fact that quite some of these players who are being mistreated at the moment, maybe not frozen out but mistreated, are players who have come through our academy. With Jez, Mark's not quite he's not come through our academy, but he's suffered for being a club servant to some degree, and he'll be fine with it. But like, I don't think we've treated him very well. Lots of players in our 21s didn't get loans because we were tied up handling other things.
Well, they did quite well in the end, though, to be fair, with the 21s lines.
On the whole, yes. And sales with sell-on fees that may not work out so much now that certain player has been released from his contract at Blackpool. But it was a tough window. But it shouldn't have been a tough window, and I think we need to hold, as fans, the people in charge accountable for that, because it shouldn't have been as difficult as it turned out to be. But to focus back on the positives, which I'm determined to get to, you got Cambo, Uche, Pino, Sosa, Benitez. Anyone I'm missing?
No, I think you said them all. Did you say Canva?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's a really strong, group of incomings. You've got Sosa, who I'd argue is maybe my lowest scoring signing of the bunch if I had to rank them. But
Paul.
look, he's
What have Palace been saying they need for the last 4 years?
El Hadji Malik Diouf, mate.
No, but they've been saying they need a backup left wing back.
Look,
They've got
he's
their
a
backup left wing
European
back.
experienced backup left wing back who offers a skill set different to Tyrone Mitchell. On that note, I'm very happy about it. And yet again, just because he's the lowest ranking doesn't mean I don't rate him. Like, I think we've done very well with incomings this window. But you're comparing him to a 19-year-old centre back who could potentially be a world beater, one of the most promising left wingers in Spain with, 25 international
What do
caps
you
at
think
22.
Mark Vicario's quotes about Pino and Uche? He said that
Just they're
Palace
the
have,
best players in La Liga.
yeah, he said Palace has signed the two best players in the Liga.
Yeah, and like Uche. I do, it's going to be really interesting to see how he adapts to the Prem, but he's got the physicality. I don't know enough about him technically, but he's versatile and he's physical, and that tends to bode well for
He's
players like
very
Glasner.
powerful. I was watching some clips of him the other day, and he's got that strength, and he's powerful and carry the ball forward. It's something that is well. It's an Eze quality of carrying the ball, but Eze never really did it with that power, and sometimes he was capable of slowing things down. Whereas I think Uche, and I mean they're totally different players, but Uche will offer something different, and he will always go if he's given the opportunity. And I think Pino is quite similar in that aspect, but not with the power and more the tricky nature. So they're two really clever additions in the fact that they can carry the ball, but in different ways, and offer those slight different profiles in the tens. And obviously Uche is a clever one as well because he's played up front, he's played in a bit of an 80 area, he's played in midfield. So yeah, I think they're really, really shrewd additions.
Yeah, and then you've got Benitez as well to round it off, who is a 30-year-old European experienced goalkeeper who was, been
Champions League, played in the
exactly.
Champions League, he's Argentinian international. Yeah, the squad is, I would say the squad is stronger than it was last year.
Yeah, and so you'll
Massively
accept
stronger.
my argument that Borna Sosa's the lowest ranking beneath all those
Oh,
incredible players I just mentioned.
yeah. And I would say the squad is in a much stronger position, pretty much operating at two players per position, which is exactly what you want to see.
Right wing back.
You've lost, well, Cardines, Capora, Klein. There's players that can play there, aren't there? So
I'll challenge you on right wing back, but otherwise I agree.
I agree with you in the sense that they need a right wing back, but there is that on a pure numbers basis, there are players who can play there.
Experienced international footballer Rio Cardines can probably do a job.
So the squad is is much more well-rounded, and that is good news. You've lost Eze, and obviously that's a tremendous amount of quality to lose. But I think in the way last summer when they sold Michael Olise, we were all talking about, well, you can't replace Michael Olise with one player, but you can improve the quality of the squad. And I don't think that was executed perfectly. I think the Sarr addition was really good. I think towards the end of the season, the Daichi Kamada free transfer looked like it started to pay off a bit. But I don't think they had replaced the quality enough across the squad overall. Whereas this summer, with the Eze money coming in, I think they've done it pretty much perfectly. It's just really disappointing to see how late it's been left. And I think my criticism of Parish will be is this is becoming a consistent pattern now of leaving business to the last minute. Yes, you might think you get better deals, but ultimately, if you wait every summer until you've got money to spend it, everyone knows you've got money, and then they just ramp the prices up anyhow. That's why you didn't get someone like Ousmane Diomande, and obviously leaving it so late, clubs don't want to sell certain players. Oliver Glasner said in his press conference that Crystal Palace shouldn't be signing players who are, the outcast and things. They should be signing players who are ready to come in and make a difference. Ultimately, when you wait so long in a window, you're not going to sign high quality players who are ready to come in and make a difference. Okay, I understand they've done it, but you're going to limit the pool of players that you can get of that because they're tied up in their starting squad. Someone like David Brook, maybe he might have been ready to come in and make a difference, but Bournemouth aren't going to sell him in the last couple of days of the window. You watched him in that game before the window closed, and he was absolutely unplayable that day. And you think, oh, actually, he could make a difference in the squad. He could add another fresh profile. But you're not going to be able to acquire those players when you're leaving it so late.
I mean, it's kind of like a mentality change where, and I will probably get flamed for this phrase, but like we're not scavengers anymore. We should be hunters going after the players that will make an immediate impact to our team. We shouldn't just be feeding off the scraps of big teams, whether that's Chilwell and Nketiah, Holding, etc. And look, some of those transfers will work out for us. I think Nketiah will probably work out. I think Henderson will probably has been fantastic, but we get screwed for value typically on those deals, and if we go after rejects, your miss rate will be big. But
I
we
also think that there's a lack of risk at the football club, and it's they would rather sign two players for £25 million each than one player for £40 million, and I think sometimes there is an art in actually being a bit bolder in the target you sign and spending a little bit more money, and because ultimately if you buy a more expensive player, you're going for a better player, if that makes sense. It might not work out in the end, and there is risk attached to that. But maybe signing the £25 million kid out of Brazil, and maybe you are more sensible going for someone with that bit more Premier League experience, and paying £35 million or paying £40 million, and then just losing that on another player, not signing two players, if you like. So I think it's, Palace could take a little bit more risk in the transfer market, and they could be a bit more attacking in the market, if you like. And I don't think the rush every summer is unnecessary, ultimately. And I Parish needs to learn, and the people around him need to learn about that. Saying that, I think all summer, the recruitment team were hounding him and asking him to release the funds and to do certain deals. And frankly, I don't think Palace can afford to do that again next summer, because ultimately, if you do manage to keep Oliver Glasner at the football club, which I think is unlikely now, as we stand, but if you do manage to do that, if you do it again to him, you've got no chance of him staying any longer. And I think any manager coming into the club as well will look at that and thinking, well, every summer they're tying their hands behind the manager's back, leaving business late, making them integrate players into a squad with very little time. Last summer, they massively underestimated the impact of having Colombian players run to the finals of the Copa America, as with the England players running to the finals of the Euros. You're going to have a World Cup next summer where you've got that potential situation arising again. And managers might be reluctant to come into the football club with that. The positive is they have got a very strong squad as it stands, but when you take Adam Wharton out of that and Mark Gainey out of that, you've got to replace two massive players.
Is that something we're maybe going to be able to be more proactive with now that we've brought in a new CEO and Sharon Lacey, as we exclusively reported, and Matt Hobbs as well from Wolves as sporting director.
I think there is finally a clearer division of structure at Palace. I think that's what those appointments bring, right? So Palace have been operating without a CEO for 3 years. So Steve Parish has essentially been chairman and acting CEO alongside Sharon Lacey as COO. And then you look at maybe someone, commercial director and Barry Webber, these people all running the football club behind the scenes. But ultimately people have been taking up jobs that aren't theirs. People have been doing jobs that aren't theirs, and people have been taking up more responsibility than necessary, which means the pressure upon their jobs is bigger than it should be. And things have slipped them by this summer, whether that's, having to deal with Cass, having to deal with the transfer market, actually the multi-club ownership regulations to start with, and how Palace were caught up on that, the sale to Woody Johnson. There's been so much going on around the football club. And ultimately, you've had people in positions or people not in a position where they should be dealing with other things going on. And it's got to a point of where that can't go on any further. Steve Parish is probably biting off more than he can chew. Oliver Glasner, as manager, has exposed Parish's weaknesses as a chairman. And finally, as a lead on, there is a clearer division now. Whether Sharon Lacey is the right person for the role, is another matter, but at least they have got people in the right positions now. And when you come to board meetings and come to meetings at the club and come to people communicating with fans, everyone now has a bit of a clearer responsibility. I think Steve Parish ultimately, though, is a control freak by nature. I think that is him. I think he, wants to be across everything at the football club. And I'm not sure his personality will change in that aspect. Yes, you will have a primary person for each matter, but the final decision is still going to lie with Steve Parish.
But, him having the final decision isn't necessarily the issue. It's him working on the minutiae of things that he
Yeah,
really
of course.
should be working on. Like, if the issue this summer was division of time, we've made a step forward that way. If it's Steve's decision making and strategy, then that's not going to change. And, we'll only know in time as we find out more, what's down to which aspect or cause.
That it's a step forward. Things are clearer, but it doesn't mean they're right yet.
Yeah, and there's probably going to be a learning curve of people working out what their responsibilities are and where they lie post restructuring. Like, it's not major. It's not like Spurs, where there's been something maybe a bit more of an uprooting, right, with Levy's exit. But
Leaving.
sure, Daniel Levy's exit, and that probably means it won't be as disruptive, but also you'll need people to sort of, they'll need time to know their new boundaries. As you said, people were doing jobs that weren't theirs before, and there'll probably still be some overlaps.
It's just made things, I guess, more coherent and uncomplicated. That people know what channels they're going through now. They know who's dealing with what. When issues arise over certain over things, whether that's the stand development, whatever, there's a first person in command now, right? That everyone's got their responsibilities and things act from there. So it's a cleaner process for the football club. Everyone has their jobs and their roles now, and that is a positive.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's probably enough to say that about transfers. I guess my last and sort of
Oh yeah, we didn't mention Matt Hobbs at all, and it's just the finally Dougie Freeman replacement. It's a good move for the club to get a director of football in. And have someone dealing with transfers day to day that actually is employed by the football club, because Ian Moody has done a really good job this summer, I would say, but not an employee of the football club. He's a consultant by nature. So yes, he's doing negotiations, yes, he's doing things, but to have someone there 24/7, actually employed by the football club, is a good move. It'd be interesting to see how that matches up for Ben Stevens and Ian Moody and that partnership that's been formed this summer, and maybe how things develop from there. Let's see how those kind of things pan out, whether that means, because Matt Hobbs will have his own people, he will have his own ideas. So whether it means he wants to change things and shake things up or go more data driven or less data driven or, expand the scouting team because the scouting team is very small at Palace. So just be interesting to see now how the structure of the recruitment department will change under a new chief. But once again, have to remember that although you've now got a footballing brain in the operating of the football club, final decisions over these structural matters will still lie with Steve Parish. So their partnership now will be interesting to see how that develops.
I think a good chairman or a good sort of head of a football club will surround himself with people who are more qualified in their specialist areas than he is. And as long as they're willing to make a strong case in favour of what they believe is the right thing, and he's willing to listen to them, we'll end up on a more positive and productive course. But despite all of this turbulence, and it has been turbulent, it's been a pretty fucking good start to the season. We won the Community Shield. We're one of only three teams undefeated in the Premier League, and a draw away at Chelsea, a win away at Villa, which was quite resounding, and a decent enough draw at home as well, in addition to progressing to the next round of the Conference League, is a fantastic start to the season. The only downside I'd say with it is that signing players late has probably cost us a couple of players in terms of fitness. I think Ismaila Sarr's hamstring injury is proof of that,
Yeah,
but
I mean, they were operating on a squad of about 15 players. Oliver Glasner says that he kind of took the injury to Sarr and he was like, maybe it's my fault for not rotating more. But I guess the counter to that is, could he rotate? He didn't have enough players to rotate.
you'll remain essay hearing what you've just said.
Yeah, but doesn't trust the player. And I think that's a difficult place to be. But yeah, I do take that Roman Essay could have been used there. Sooner and to spread the load and the games out a bit more. But ultimately the squad wasn't deep enough for that. But I think we kind of have to move past that now because the squad is in a really good position. The start to the season is so much better than it was last year. It was what, 7 games without a win last season. Before that win at home against Tottenham, and now this season it's 3 games in. You played three of last season's top seven. And you're unbeaten with a stunning win at Aston Villa, a good draw against Forest, and a good draw that should have been a win against Chelsea. So looking forward, I think the club are in or the football team are in an absolutely fantastic position to go and have a good Premier League season. The worry is how they'll deal with Europe and playing Thursday, Sunday. But I think they are more than capable of finishing within a European spot with the way they've started the season because they're getting results against the teams better than them. By the end of this month, I think you would have played four of last season's top seven because you play Liverpool. You've got a nice game against Sunderland coming up now, hopefully another 3 points on the board before a trip to West Ham. Those are the games you have to win if you're serious about getting European football. And I
That's
just,
European football.
I'm,
I thought we
pardon?
were the title.
Well, yeah, that's true. But no, if you're serious about finishing within that top seven, top eight, you've got to be winning the Sunderland, West Ham games, those kind of things, and looking at the Liverpool game as a bit more of a free hit, if you like. But then it's straight into that first European away day, Dynamo Kiev, set to be played in Lublin as it stands. But let's see how the political situation unfolds there. It's just a really exciting season, and with the squad that they've got, I would be. I'd say I would bet on them to go deep in the Conference League, possibly a couple of decent cup runs and Millwall game next week. And yeah, Premier League, it's all going to be how they deal with the extra load. But on the pure quality of the squad alone and how the season started, I would have no qualms with putting Palace in the top eight.
Yeah, and we've got, I guess I feel bad for Glasner because we've signed all these players that he hasn't seen a glimpse of, in terms of Uche and Convo going away to their international teams. Pino, I honestly don't know where he's at. I don't know if he's trained the last couple of weeks, but because obviously he pulled out of the Spain squad due to injury concerns with his ankle. But if you're naming a squad to play at Sunderland, I guess the only change I would put in would be Pino would play at left wing or right wing, and Daichi comes in to supplement Sarr's injury.
You've got to deal with Wharton's injury as well.
Jesus. Uche? Lerma? After having just flown back from Colombia?
Yeah, Hughes and Lerma, you would imagine. Or it'd be Hughes and Kamada, possibly.
Powerhouse midfield of strong physical dominance, that one.
Yeah.
Look, they're good players. Sunderland are still gelling. They're a bit ropey. They've looked good at times, but
They look good at home, and I think Sunderland will stay up. I generally do, but I think that will be on off their home form. I think they will be really good at home. They will grind out results up in the northeast at the Stadium of Light. However, I think they will struggle away from home, and I think Palace should be taking 3 points on Saturday.
yeah, I think it's basically a must-win game. I know I got criticized last year for saying we had
I think
money
must-win
game.
territory at this start of the season is absolutely fine way to put it. I said to someone a couple of days ago in overtake, it might have even been you. And I think if you do want to be getting in the top eight, you have to treat these games as must-win because you ultimately, you could beat all the top eight all season but not get there because there's 11 other teams you've got to deal with. So these are absolutely the games you must be taking 3 points from.
Yeah, and I think Glasner will probably approach it with that mentality just because of the person that he is.
And the
I
silly points they dropped last season. So like you look at the two Brentford games. How can you not even get a point against Brentford?
Everton
They
fans as
weren't a
well.
great side at all. There were so many of these occasions last season where they weren't getting the results from these kind of games. Leicester, the two all draw at home. These are the games you need to be getting 3 points from.
You're just naming the games that I happen to go to, Like, I got so unlucky, genuinely. I went to three home games before the FA Cup. They were Everton, as in this year in 2025, and they were Everton, which we lost, Brentford, which we lost, and the horrific 0-0 draw with Bournemouth. It was just like we would be undefeated in 2025 if we could have sorted out Everton and Brentford, if Daichi didn't do a ridiculous, assault on someone
Ricardo.
outside, yeah. And what was it? We got hammered at Newcastle because we're cursed at St James's.
Oh,
But yeah, I think that's basically all we wanted to discuss because we are running out of time in our Zoom meeting, and that's now how we dictate the length of these podcasts. But we hope you enjoyed the return. The next time you see me, I'll be in my new place as I'm moving for the first time to South London, which is quite exciting.
You
Stay
won't be
tuned.
going to Palace any more than he does.
Oh no, I'm going to be going every week. I'm going to
How
Millwall, which is going to be
are you
rough.
doing
I'm
them?
coming down on the fucking train line that they're going to be coming down on.
Oh
So
boy, from
yeah,
London Bridge.
because I go through Broccoli, so
Yeah.
going to be good
I
fun.
will be driving my new car to that one. I will not be getting involved in any trouble. I'll be there nice and early. Stay clear of it. I'll keep my head down.
Well done, mate. You've told everyone. What a way to tell the TL you've got a car. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Palace Way podcast, and hopefully we can start the next one celebrating a victory against Sunderland.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.